to Trying to Sound Intelligent.
Trying to Sound Intelligent.
And I'm Mr. G.
I'm Joshua.
And we've got the guest, Jalade.
Hey guys, how you doing?
Yeah, cool. So for those of you that don't know, Trying to Sound Intelligent, it's two grumpy old men. Me, Mr.
I'm
G.
Not that old. I'm not that old.
What you don't have in age, you make up for in grumpiness. And I'm not going to say that we're trying to figure out the meaning of life.
It's 42.
We have figured out the meaning of life.
Also 42.
Right? You know, it's just that my meaning of life is better than Josh's meaning of life.
This is a lie.
You know, your life is meaningless until I present my meaning of life.
Jalade, I'm sorry you have to witness this.
Yeah.
Jalade, I'm...
This is how we roll. This is how we roll. And so anyway, what I'm really glad is, I'm really glad that we've got a guest. We've got the amazing Jalade. And what I'm starting to realise is, I've been going around to different poetry nights and I've been like asking people if they want to be a guest on the show.
How many guests have you got?
I asked a lot of people and only a few people got back, right?
I wonder why.
Jalade got back. He got back to me straight away.
Because he's a bad man.
He's a bad man. I realised that the younger crew got back to me, right? But the older poetry heads, they're kind of reserved. And what I realized,
the ones that have seen us hanging at the back in their quirky,
exactly, yeah,
with our folded arms.
I think we actually scare people.
Wow.
You think?
I'm telling you, man. I think there's some folks that are actually like intimidated by, because I get into raging arguments with folks.
Basically, if you followed my Facebook, you notice I tend to burn a bridge on a regular. I wake up every week and think, who have I not offended today? who might possibly help my career? Let me argue with them. Let me just have this big old argument with them.
It's terrible, man.
It's terrible.
Because what I think is,
that's why we're doing the podcast.
We're doing the podcast so we don't ruin everyone. Yeah.
Okay, I get it now.
That's what it's about. So we can get our rage and everything out into the open. Yeah. And then that way we're not ruining everyone's Saturday nights, which we've done many a time, man. But I think that the essence of spoken word is that, because like when you go to a spoken word night, you're hearing so many different concepts, so many different ideas, so many different like political values and systems, and like so afterwards the conversations do get quite deep and quite heavy. And I just think that me and Josh, I think we just go just that little bit further in behavior.
Well, I think it's needed. I think the scene's a bit too nice.
Yeah, that's what I think, man.
I think if the scene is even the right word to use, I just think it's too nice. Everyone's trying to be democratic in a way, which is good, but at the same time, you don't talk about issues you really want to talk about.
How did you get into spoken word?
2012, maybe.
The world didn't end.
It hadn't ended. I mean, I was cool for it to end. I've lived my life, you know.
Yeah. Wow. I was glad to see you say that when you're 50. You know? When you're 15, taking cod liver oil and aspirin to stay alive.
Which I do now, by the way. Keep the bones supple and all that jazz. But I'd been a writer for a very long time since I was a kid living in Nigeria. And I came back to London from uni. And people were like, oh, you're a writer, you should go perform. I was like, I'd never do that. So I went to a show in Finsbury Park, a small little thing, which doesn't exist anymore. And that's where I met all these poets doing their thing. I was like, I want to try this.
Yeah.
So from 2012, I started performing. And that was the start of it, really. It's been about 4 years that I've been a spoken word artist.
Because I met you, I'm pretty sure, did I first meet you on London Live?
Yes.
Yeah, because I was doing this paper review on London Live.
Yeah,
I was
working in London Live, so I work in film and TV as well.
Yeah,
so I was working for them as a camera operator, a tech guy, and everything. So that's why I'd known about you before then, but I actually met him because he came on the show, and that's why I was like, oh, let me introduce myself.
Oh, sweet,
kind of thing. Yeah,
yeah. No,
and you're part of a collective, 6 weeks.
Yes, so I'm part of 6 weeks. We spell it SXWKS because we're hippies.
Right.
Take out the vowels.
I've seen it.
We're a creative collective comprising of filmmakers, poets, singers, rappers, artists.
And they're proper young, you know. Like,
yeah.
I was boxed in last night, and 6 weeks got a shout out, and all these little young crews going, 6 weeks, 6 weeks, in front
not,
of
them. Not with
front
right
of, front of not, little. What do you mean? There was no bass in their voice,
what
man.
What do you mean?
There was no bass. There was no bass in their voice, man. There was no bass.
You hold up two, three fingers like your Hunger Games.
No, we might use that from now on.
Yeah. Just really quiet, really quiet. Yes, someone just say, I'm in 6 weeks, and just two, three fingers just go off.
It might be a bit more foreboding than shout, but we'll go for it.
Why'd you call yourself 6 weeks?
So, I mean, I joined the collective months after it started. I was approached by them. So Caleb, he asked me if I wanted to join.
Big up to Caleb, man.
We're gonna have him down soon.
Yeah, please do. Caleb is like a don. So the name...
That good.
Yes.
trying to not intelligent. Yo, oh my god.
Listen, bruv, I tried to defend you, you know what I'm saying? I got your back, you know what I'm saying? Like, it's
cool. Anyway, moving on.
Yeah. I do like Caleb. I do like
you
him.
Say that
right?
Now. You
know, I don't want to be cussing behind his back, right? I do like him.
Yeah. I think Caleb is really good. I think he's really good.
I feel like you're just saying that now to appease something.
Right. I'm saying just to appease you because you're just getting all nervous now. You're moving further and further away from the mic.
I'm just making sure that, you know, it's cool, it's quiet. Caleb, you know, dude, we're bros.
Yeah. Caleb is cool. Moving on. Let's move on. Right. You met Caleb.
But yeah, 6 weeks stands for the period of summer and what it represents in the terms of there being this sort of freedom, especially when you're in school. But what they decided to do was bring that same freedom into the adult stages in terms of creativity. So 6 weeks, like Gisette would have mentioned yesterday at Boxed In, by the way, she said it represents this creative freedom that we want to maintain throughout our lives. And whether you're working a 9-to-5 or whatever, you still want to be able to be that person at the dead of night working on something you believe in because it fuels your life. You know, it's part of you. So that collective is about that, trying to foster that belief through everyone we meet. So it's not an exclusive collective. It doesn't matter who you are, where you're from. You can come in.
Really?
Yeah, literally.
How many are in it?
So we're 30 plus.
30 plus?
Yeah.
Wow, Wu-Tang did not last.
It's been about 2 years since we started and
if there's any lessons that we learned from So Solid.
you make one mistake, we're not So Solid, number one.
There you go. We're not rappers. They've learned from there.
I'm just saying that there's going to be one person or there's going to be a few people that are going to have the strong vision, right? There's going to be the RZAs. It's going to be the RZAs, right? The RZAs are going to be the ones with the definitive idea of what it is, right? Yeah. Then there's going to be the Capadonnas, do you know what I'm saying, right? Who are driving a cab on the weekend and maybe doing a couple of shows. Then there's going to be the ODBs,
let the man
right?
talk.
But the ODBs, who talk. You're going to have to be bailing out of jail.
Forget my earlier point that I made that we're not exclusive. Therefore, there'll of course be core members and other people who come in once in a while.
So. Is there collaboration? Right. Is there any collaboration?
Always. So we've made documentaries, we've done a lot of music tracks, we've done some poetry tracks, we've done some live shows, we did Edinburgh Fringe last year.
See?
The thing is, a lot of us that went didn't actually perform, they just went to support us. Yeah. So our collective is more than just people that come to perform. Some of them just want to be a part of it because they
30 like, plus though, dude.
Listen, Caleb's house on a Monday, he will tell you, if he brings it up to this show, he'll tell you how full that place gets.
I'm just saying that after a period of time,
what you're witnessing is an old man trying to deal with the Snapchat of poetry. I don't know what's going on. How does this work? It will never last. It doesn't. What, mobile phones? What the hell is that? Internet? Come off it. I send letters by hand, bro.
I send messages by pigeon, bro. Pigeon, you know what I'm saying? Because wow. I know that when the internet crashes, birds will always fly.
Yeah. Yeah.
But aside from that, you know, you also do photography.
Yeah.
Right. Because I saw you at Flower Tree. I went to see when Flower Tree had a reunion at Brixton. Yeah. Right? And I saw you on stage taking photos of them.
Flower Tree had a reunion.
Yeah, they did. They just finished their reunion tour in America.
Butterflies, bro.
Yeah. I know.
Butterflies. Michael Jackson. Virgil is better than Michael. Sorry, I just have to say that.
No, Flower Tree are amazing.
They are amazing.
And Natalie, the poet, she used to be a member of a crew called 3+1, right? Mm. And whose phone is that?
Whose phone is that?
My watch, mate.
Your watch. Wow. All right, we'll let it go. Retro cool. Guys, that was a watch.
That was a digital Casio digital watch.
£7 Amazon.
So how did you end up doing that
photography
Photography, like getting the flower tree gig.
Natalie
has actually become a friend. So she launched an event early last year called the Flow Vortex.
Yeah.
So I applied to be one of the poets because you have to send an email to say you want to be part of the show.
Yeah. Mm.
So I sent and I got in. And from that day, after my poetry, we became friends. We'd hang out and everything. And she said to me, look, I got shows coming up. Would you like to do photography? I was like, would I? You know?
Yeah.
So that's how I got to shoot her event, Flowetry's event kind of thing. So yeah, Natalie's been quite cool.
Did you ever meet any of the other poets that she used to roll with? There's a guy called Darwood, a guy called Nolan Weeks, Carl Ramsey.
Fenswam?
No. She was part of a collective called 3+1.
Because Fenswam is in Star Wars. I just thought I'd say that.
Guardians of the Galaxy.
He's in Guardians of the Galaxy.
And he's in Star Wars. Fenswam is from way back. Fenswam is like a spoken word artist from, I guess, early noughties, man. You know what I mean? But Natalie, which is a group called 3+1,
She's mentioned them before.
They were amazing. I don't think
we've met anyone from that.
Right. Yeah, you should ask her about her spoken word history.
But she talks about it whenever we do hang out. She's always talking about what it used to be like and how it is now and how she's.
Ask her about her past.
She openly talks about it. Like, she's that cool. She openly talks about it.
So where do you see yourself in the, I suppose, like the pantheon or the ranks of spoken word? What is it that brought you into it, and what is it that you want to add to it?
I think because I was a writer before anything else, I just wanted to write because I had stories to tell. Growing up in Nigeria and everything, and stories, you know, just came at you. And coming to London, seeing the grand scene and everything, I felt like I wanted to contribute my own two cents. I couldn't spit for anything. I was rubbish.
Same. You're amongst people who couldn't speak for anything.
Exactly. In fact, this we're gonna set up a little focus group called Black Men That Can't Rap.
I like that.
Black men that can't rap or sing. Is there a place for us in society? Is there a job for us in this world?
That'd be quite cool.
What can we look forward to?
That is a good question. I'm not really too sure. I mean, myself within the scene, I just see myself as a witness most of all. I might perform here and there, but I prefer to write these days.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Only because I was getting tired of the spaces I was performing in.
Yeah.
They weren't doing anything to show me what it could be.
What do you want it to be though? Because this is the thing, right? I'm ancient past.
Can you stop talking Joss like is, a dead
Joss,
the ground?
Joss is just about retiring, dude, right? You are the future.
We are pictures on the wall. You are walking through the museum.
Exactly.
Right? You understand?
What is it that you want? No, seriously, there must be something that frustrates you, and it's that whole thing of be the change you want to see. There must be something you want to see. There must be something that frustrates you, and so there must be something you feel. You know what? I can actually do this better. Or I feel I can add this to the scene.
Do you remember that Honda ad?
No.
Hate something, change something.
Was this before my date of birth or after my date of birth?
Ooh, wow. That's what we want to see.
Jelani
got pass. You want to see the real Jelani.
Jelani got pass.
Man's coming in real polite, just asking for, I'll just have some water. I don't want anything else. I just want some water.
You've been drinking JD, you know, by the end of the night.
Trust me. And we're talking Jack Daniels, you know?
All right, but yeah, seriously, what would you want to see change?
I want to see a lot of things change. That's why I'm a writer. I want to see people actually reading more. So I come from the part of the scene where people just saw someone on YouTube and they said I could do that.
Yeah.
And that pisses me right off.
Okay.
Obviously I could have fallen into that if I had not met certain poets and been part of certain movements that made me realise there is more to it than just getting a few that.
Yeah.
So I want to see people actually reading, taking time out, realising that poetry isn't going anywhere, like it's not running away from you. It's always gonna be around, so take your time.
Yeah.
Don't do it because you need retweets or videos and all that stuff. It pisses me right off. It's cheapening the form. So I wish people could take a step back, investigate more. And then go for it properly.
But don't you think? Because like recently, I've been like hosting quite a few slams, so I've been dealing with a lot of
What have you been dealing with?
I don't know. I'm dealing with a lot of this. My memory's going.
All right. No. Could you hold that point?
Okay, I'm gonna hold that point. Do you know what I'm saying?
Please hold that point. Right? What is the song you want to play?
My favorite song that started my love of hip hop properly from '97. Got to Let's Go on Janet Jackson for Q-Tip.
That's a hip hop song.
Yeah.
You call that a hip hop song?
Yeah.
Trying to Sound Intelligent is about to play Got Till It's Gone.
Jesus. Some people say R&B, whatever. I call it hip hop.
All right. Got Till It's Gone. Okay. Don't diss the guest.
Come on,
choice.
Video. Come on.
Trying to Sound Intelligent, Got Till It's Gone. Listen and enjoy.
I wish it began Yeah. Yeah. Let me just fuck with it for a minute.
You don't know what you thought of it.
Now you realizing when them nights go long, right? Give me for me to say when you know that I'm gone, right? You act all wild when I tell you to settle. I was working around the clock with your girls on the metal. Talk about I heard you spent with the chick on the beach. That was out with the tie, but my love you impeached. Now you looking at the walls, head and hand cold jonesing. Rigging my house, hanging up and imposing. Now why you wanna go and do that, love, huh? Now why you wanna go and do that, and do that, huh? Now why you wanna go and do that, love, huh? Now why you wanna go and do that, and do that, huh? Now why you wanna go and do that, love, huh? Now why you wanna go and do that, and do that, huh? Now why you wanna go and do that, love, huh? Now why you wanna go and do that, and do that, and do that.
And that was Got Till It's Gone by Janet Jackson, featuring Q-Tip.
Yeah,
selected by our guest Jelade, who referred to it as a hip hop track.
I can see what he did.
Thank you very much.
It's R&B slash hip hop.
Thank you.
Is there rapping it?
Slash.
Is there rapping it?
Yeah, just because it's rapping, don't mean it's hip hop, man.
Wow.
This is an element of hip hop.
Yeah.
So therefore, this is why it's R&B slash hip hop. At the very least,
it's R&B.
Bobby
it's R&B. All right then. Name a lyric from the rap.
From the rap.
Yeah, go on.
Why you wanna go and do that?
That wasn't the rap.
It's part of the rap.
That's just some little chorusy type thing, man. Be honest with yourself. All you remember is Janet Jackson singing and Q-Tip going, why you wanna go and do that? All right then, darling. Second verse of the rap.
Because if you played the verse now, I would see every single line.
Well, just say it then.
If you played it, I can actually.
No, just say it.
It's memories.
Yeah. You're a young dude, man. You're born before the Honda advert. You know what I mean? Right? Jeez, man. I'll be honest with you, I think G has a better memory attached to that song. I'm a purist.
No.
I don't even
really, G.
Deep down in my heart, right?
I'm a purist, right?
When I first got into hip hop, I used to not even like any tune that had a singing chorus. I just liked bars.
What?
Seriously. All the early rap albums I used to like and buy, right? All the tunes I liked were just bars. I didn't even like a singing chorus.
So you never liked Kid and Play?
What? No, really?
What? I can't stand you.
I am kidding.
From bars to Brexit.
Okay.
Which is the topic of this section.
Yeah, we're going to talk about Brexit. The reason why we've got to talk about Brexit is because I'm starting to realize that there's not many black people that have an opinion on Brexit, right?
Wow.
And I've been going to all of these like really trendy poetry nights and these trendy like chill pill. We did this whole thing called Open Generation where there was debate on Brexit.
Mm.
And I'm starting to realize, wow, this is some deep stuff. And people are asking me for my opinion on it. And I'm just thinking, I don't even know if I've got an opinion. I don't know if I've got an opinion.
So let's go back. Let's kind of like put some foundation on this shit. Basically, the United Kingdom wants to have a referendum on whether they want to stay or leave the EU. On the one side is let's stay in the EU because we get to travel without getting no bloody visa.
Yeah.
There's movement across the EU countries.
Mm-hmm.
We never get into a situation that led to World War II where countries are isolationary and they have this xenophobic attitude to other countries because, hell, Europe is this big continent where everybody speaks different languages. And the closer we are together, the more we are likely to be united in the face of any outside adversity and the less we're likely to have little tiny things roll over into big Nazi problems. On the other side are racists. Racists who've used the immigration problem or the immigration conversation, because it's not really a problem, the immigration conversation in the UK as a fear-mongering tactic to create this idea that the EU is this blundering, incompetent. I mean, they are quite slightly incompetent in some way because it's bureaucracy that it breeds incompetency by nature, right? They're using that.
I understand that.
They're talking about like...
I understand, but I'm just asking you, how much do you care?
How much do I care? I care a lot because I like to travel.
That's the thing.
Like, I care a lot.
But
I love travel.
Be honest,
I believe
all these people that are talking about this wonderful Europe where you can move from here to there, blah, blah, blah. You know, we're getting stopped at every border, same way still. In Europe or out of Europe, man, I'm getting stopped at every border.
The rate at which we get stopped would increase if we did leave. Because think of it this way.
So what's the difference between getting stopped?
Right now.
That's like someone saying to you, right? Yeah. Okay, you can get stopped and searched twice a week, or you can get stopped and searched 10 times a week. It's still going
to
be annoying.
Isn't the point of a vote to choose the lesser of two evils anyway? You're never really good. You're never really gonna
blam!
Win.
Blam.
So, here's what I'm saying. I don't agree that we should be getting stopped in any case. But the fact
I'm just joking.
I know. But the thing is, for me, it's like I've got a passport that allows me to get to any of these places without a visa.
Yeah,
exactly. That for me is better than having to wait to apply for a visa. It'll cost me extra money apart from the flights and everything else.
And imagine how many times they can stop you.
Exactly.
Now that they have to, vet your application.
Is that the only? Is that the only benefit?
No,
that is my issue. This is my issue.
For me, the many other benefits for us to stay in the EU. The currency is another good thing for me as well. Even though I don't.
Yeah, but we got a pound. We're not part of the euro.
We're not part of the euro, but the thing is, the pound, I think the pound would be affected if we did leave. I think it really would. I think so, and I'm talking as obviously an African who's lived between here and the UK. Now, someone, I don't really necessarily see myself basing myself in the UK for many reasons. But the fact of the matter is, whilst the UK is what it is right now, it's still beneficial for a lot of us to stay here and go back and forth if we wanted to, currency wise as well. If we left the EU, I think living conditions and everything would change for a lot of people here. The policies would change. The way we're allowed to even move around would change. And then
let's look at it from the point of view of immigration, right?
Yeah.
Now,
see, that's my bugbear.
So here's the thing about immigration, right? The UKIP have campaigned. This has been their single issue campaign. We need to get out of the EU. We need to get out of the EU, right?
And this is going
they win this. That's going to turn the conversation on immigration. So that's going to affect people I know. That's going to affect me.
Yep.
That's going to affect my modes of travel. I'm a poet who travels a lot to do music gigs, to do poetry gigs. Mm. And if every single time I need to go to another country, I need to sign some kind of application form because a couple of politicians who never have this problem, who never get stopped at any station, feel like, oh, we need to leave because Rule Britannia. Imagine how the right now across the UK we're seeing right wing parties gaining traction. It's happening in Hungary, it's happening in Sweden, it almost happened in
all the places you want to go visit.
it almost happened in Austria. We're having America, you know, big land of the free and home of the brave, and they're like 50% chance of voting in Donald Trump. Donald fucking Trump.
Who's now the leader of the Republican.
Oh, but yeah, he's your main choice. And this vote for me is even less about any of the peripheral reasons, you know, the secondary, this is how much we're going to lose. This vote is for me really about immigration. And it's really about racists and not racists. Racists win, they get emboldened. Racists don't win, they get to scuttle back into their little fucking tiny holes and complain about it on their little website and boards.
Here's my problem, right? My problem is the language that's used. So the people that say they want to leave. What I don't like is the fact that they're going towards the whole immigration issue. So that's their only argument.
That's because that's all their argument.
Right? But for the people that are for, they're talking about economics. Oh, your house price is going to go. This is going to happen. And in my brain, to me, business carries on. Business don't care about nationality. Business don't care about nothing. And you know what made me learn this was the Afghanistan war. The majority of the world's heroin comes from Afghanistan.
You're talking about two different commodities.
No. Here. The majority of the world's heroin comes from Afghanistan. When Afghanistan was getting bombed to shit, do you know what I'm saying? The price of heroin didn't bloody change. You know what I mean? So that either means...
Only Mr. Right? G would know this.
No. That either means, right, that either George Bush wasn't bombing poppy fields or the need for heroin was so strong
can I ask you
that the channels were still there.
Can I ask you a question?
So business still carries on.
But can I just throw one tiny thing in there?
Go on.
So we're all watching the news, watching Afghanistan getting bombed. And who's checking the heroin stock prices?
All I'm saying is there was the same amount of smackheads outside my door. Who's checking?
Poppy seeds have gone up 5%. You know what I'm saying?
Smackheads outside my estate.
Dow Jones for poppy seeds.
During the Afghanistan war, there weren't less syringes in my flat lift. You know what I'm saying, right? That's all I'm saying.
I get what you're saying, but for me, it's like, if we take it back to immigration and the subject of housing, for example, just for example, hypothetically speaking, people that will be affected by the immigration issue might not even want to stay in the UK anymore and leave. So the people in the UK that would have actually benefited that housing boom won't be around to actually contribute to that anymore.
Dude, did you see that guy that walked through the Channel Tunnel? There's a guy that walked through the Channel Tunnel and he was like a few metres away from England and he got arrested. You think that any Brexit policy is going to stop dudes like that?
I'm speaking from people I know in my generation.
Because that dude deserves to be British.
No, the thing is,
he's more British than I am.
But you're talking about people that are looking in from the outside. Now, for us that are here, especially our generation, we're getting sick of it, to be honest. We're tired of the fact that we actually can't, for example, where I live, right? I've had that place since I was a kid.
Yeah.
And the price I pay for that is what people pay for one room a month. I almost caught myself saying to a friend, oh, it's how much you pay for a room? That's not bad. And I realized, wait, what you're paying is what I pay for my whole entire apartment.
Yeah.
And I'm just like, wait a minute. If this immigration policy goes ahead and other things affect me, I might not want to live here anymore. So the people that are here will be like, fuck this room. I'm gonna jet. Yeah. So anyone else looking to get an actual full apartment, they're not gonna do it because they can't see the point in living here. Then those housing associations will then lose out
Let's not even come into bring into the conversation what benefits we've gained from immigration. Mm-hmm. You know,
exactly.
Or the fact that UK has more immigrants around the EU than any other country, or the people who've come here and have benefited our economy.
Exactly, you know, immigration is one of the biggest
pushed up our
contributors to the economy.
Which racists don't want to ever look at because they have to admit that, yeah, you know, the Polish and the Romanians and the Asians and what's it called, Hungarians and the Swedes who have all come here mm-hmm. and have made our economy blossom mm-hmm. in this way. Far outweighs whatever nationalistic pride that they have in their little fucking tiny sofas.
Well, that's why I can never side with the Brexit crew about immigration, because in my opinion, mm-hmm. right, in my opinion, the Celts and the whole Gaelic crew should never have let the Anglo-Saxons and the Vikings, they should never let them folk come over here, man, because they came over here and changed the language of the country, changed the religion, changed everything. So when it comes to immigration, mm. I'm annoyed about the Vikings, man. Do you know what I'm saying, right?
I'm going way back, old school.
You know? I'm taking it before Janet Jackson and bloody Q-Tip. You know what I'm saying, right? I'm taking it way back to the essence, to the elements.
Very
you know what I mean?
Those crew that
built Stonehenge, they should have cut off the borders and stopped everybody from coming in. They should have cut off the Romans. They should have cut off the Anglos, the Saxons, the Jutes, the Brittany, the Normandies,
the
1066. They should have just stuck to their own thing and said, look, we're just going to eat our little beetroot, you know what I mean? Or whatever the fuck they were eating, right?
Fuck that tea.
Right? You know?
Fuck that tea.
Exactly. Fuck the tea. Fuck potatoes, right? You know what I'm saying?
PG tips.
Right? And just chilled. And that way, that would have been a true Brexit.
So, with this...
Interesting. Britain is a subject of external influence.
Yeah.
Or creation of external influence.
Exactly. And with that in mind...
The phrase English comes from the Angles. They're from Germany.
And with this in mind, I'm going to play some Bjork.
Oh,
the Hunter. I thought I could organise freedom.
I'm getting killed out of here.
Perfectly
I'm getting killed
placed.
Here.
How Scandinavian
well
am
I?
You're going out to Iceland.
I'm going
out
to Iceland.
You know, I met Bjork. I met her.
Yes, yes. You've told me this story before.
Many times, yeah.
Do not care.
Yeah.
I'm playing Bjork. Yeah. Trying to start a turgeon. I'm Josh. This is G. We have our guest here, Jolade.
Yeah.
Excellent, excellent guest.
Yeah. Okay, all right. And with Bjork.
Don't hate.
No, I won't hate. She's got something.
I thought I could organize freedom. How Scandinavian of me. Bars, bro. Can't breathe. Can't touch it.
Anyway, you guys made me forget my point. I was making a point originally about, like, I was at the Roundhouse and I was a judge for a slam. This is going back to the point you made a little while ago about watching YouTube. And so there's a part of me that actually thinks that, obviously, I'm from way back in the day before YouTube, right? Mm-hmm. The fact that now you've got young poets that are watching YouTube, I'm starting to think that their performance skills are actually a lot better off the bat. Because they've been watching so much stuff. They've been able to access poetry so much that when they actually start to perform, I know it sounds cliche because obviously you can see a lot of people have been influenced by George the Poet. You can see a lot of people influenced by Kate Tempest. Like, there's loads of Kate Tempest
and
clones.
Scroobius
right?
Pip,
and Scroobius Pip.
And Polar
right?
Bear.
But and Polar Bear, indeed. But what I mean is that, like, in a way, why not learn from the best? So as much as I think to myself, yeah, okay, I can see where you've been influenced from, it at least has given them that kind of, like, performance confidence. True. That maybe, like,
I can agree that to a certain extent. All I'd say is that you shouldn't see one video and assume you can do it straight off what you've seen.
Right.
I'd say take a bit more time to actually see what else is out there. Just watch
expand.
A video, expand. Go
because this
event.
Idea of the best is subjective. It's
exactly.
Like,
yeah.
You've
changes,
got people who are the most popular, who have
it
got
changes.
Popular views. But I see, you're right, these people, Scroobius, Kate, Polar Bear, these are some of our finest poets, and they have got the rewards that they have been due because they've put a lot of work into it. They've got a lot of performance chops, and their work, their writing work, is absolutely excellent. So I see your point.
And especially
but
with the...
also I see Jolade's point that that's not the end of it. You still got your Dames Messiah, you still got your Inua, you still got your Musa, you still got your Mr. G. You know, strange sound.
You might not agree, but yeah.
You might not agree. Yeah, yeah. You still got bare other people that you can check out who aren't that kind of. That's the great thing I feel about UK spoken word versus US spoken word. US spoken word, sometimes I do feel like it's quite homogenic in terms of performance style.
It's formulaic. Yeah.
You know, you watch bottom poetry, it's like you've seen everyone. Whereas in UK spoken word, you know, if you spat, you're going to hit Kate Tempest, and you're also going to hear people like Rob Alton, who are completely different.
Different styles.
You understand?
Yeah.
Completely different. But also, but you can learn from both of them. You can learn from both styles. You can learn your punchlines and your surreal humor from Rob Alton.
I just say people should read more. I mean that. Even if you don't want to be a page poet, read some damn more. Because what it is that a lot of poets sound the same, not only because of the way they perform, but kind of the words they use and how they use them and what style they put
the
them
metaphors, the way they
yeah,
the way
yeah,
they apply the metaphor. Like, look at like Warsaw and Shah. Why don't we need more poets reading Warsaw and Shah, because then we'll
have
more poets
in my bag right now.
Bad man, which one?
Teaching my mother how to give birth.
Okay, cool, sweet one.
Yeah.
See.
I got that one.
I told you I had the one. You know,
the recent one?
No, there was one that she showed like, 12 copies of it or something really silly. Like, it was so rare. And I
typical
Warsaw. I'm going to write good shit. I ain't going to say it. So, yeah. Have you seen anything recently?
Recently, the film I saw recently was 10 Cloverfield Lane.
12, actually. 12.
Oh, is it 12?
You saw a bootleg.
Seriously?
No, it's 10. Joking.
And the worst thing is, I did see a bootleg, so it's like, shit, the guy knows. Oh my God. Because obviously, I do go to the cinema quite a lot in this day and age.
Just claim that we all
see it as though, like.
And that's why we need immigration. Because I need to get some films that you can't get nowhere. You know what I mean?
So, yeah, what?
No, I was amazed because I wasn't a big fan of the first Cloverfield, right?
Really?
Which I did see. Yeah. I mean, I like the idea of it where it's all being shot on different camera phones and different security cameras, and you're just getting
just one camera
of
phone
the monsters here
camera,
and then whatever the fuck, I'm on a roll here, right? You know? And but this one was the fact that, like, the woman's been she's been kidnapped by John Goodman.
And spoil it for me, why don't you? Because I haven't seen
no,
it.
No, you know
I spoil
that
films.
From the
I spoil
okay,
films left, right, and center.
No, go ahead. I'm not going to watch it.
Right?
So go
exactly.
Ahead.
You ain't going to watch it either. True. You'll be watching 6 weeks Cloverfield Lane. You know what I'm saying? Right? Representing summer.
Cloverfield,
hey, man,
6 weeks
six
later.
Weeks represents summer. You know what I mean? Yeah. Anyway.
G wants to get invited.
What? 31 members in the clique. Do you know what I mean? 31 members of the
clique,
man. Jesus
Christ. The olds are coming. The olds are coming. So yeah, you saw.
I'm gonna kill this guy. I'm telling you, this guy's getting it. This guy ain't making it home, man. This guy's getting Cloverfield. My man's getting locked in a basement, Dredd. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. I've seen that film.
Yeah.
And I agree with you. The first film did have its problems. The whole, oh, I'm going to film everything. I'm not going to put camera down. Like, really? And the second, I still remember that scene where that girl ran with high heels. And that always puzzles me when you have a film and there's this fantastical, huge monster or thing happening. The world is ending. And the director goes to this actress and she goes, yeah, yeah. So for this scene, you're terrified. And probably the girl's like, all right, cool, cool, cool. Let me take off my heels. And he's like, nah. Leave the hills.
Because maybe leave the hills. It's kind of, I find that kind of realistic in a sense, because if you're running for your life, you don't really stop to think about what you're wearing.
No, 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 you do.
You would.
You do.
It depends on the
story. A woman will kick off her heels.
Please.
I mean,
don't let me get the ghost of Bridget here.
Just hang outside any nightclub at 4 o'clock in the morning.
That's not a life threatening situation.
Oh, really? Guns going off in the night.
Girls getting home at night. Girls getting home at night in London. It's not a life threatening situation.
Brother, I've been in nightclubs in Bolton where two girls were about to fight. The first thing they did was take off their shoes, bro.
Again, I could say that would be the case, but I can't really talk because I'm not a woman, but I'm just trying to envision myself as someone with a huge ass monster on my back.
Take off your heels.
If I was in a suit, would I say I wish I had some joggers on me right now? I wouldn't really...
No. You think, you know, I run faster. You start running with your leg, and then you remember that, you know, how much poise and how much fucking balance you've had to
maybe
do.
Maybe she's got skills, yo. I've seen some women running heels that could give me a run for my money.
Why? Okay. What? You couldn't catch him.
He told you he was coming back.
But as a film, I really liked it. I thought John Goodman was absolutely brilliant. Menacing. Menacing. Wow, yeah. Same word. Ooh, same word. We need to read more to expand our vocabulary. Right? No. I thought it was. But I didn't like the end. I didn't like the end with the reveal of the
end
of the
was
monsters.
A bit rushed.
That was a bit Men in Black.
You know what I mean? But not to ruin it for anybody. But yeah, it does have a twist that you're either going to love for kind of like geekiness. Sake, or you're just going to be like, what? This makes no sense. This completely ruins the tone of the entire film. But yeah.
Fair enough.
What have you seen, Jolade?
So I haven't really seen much films recently, but I saw...
Sacrilege. I know. You're a black man. That's all we do. We stay at home and we watch the films.
Really?
No.
Okay. Just checking. Yeah. I'm the wrong black man. Yeah. I saw Yomi Greed's coat scratched.
I saw that too.
At Roundhouse.
Right. What did you think?
The scratch is beautiful. Yomi is a brilliant storyteller.
Wasn't the lighting brilliant?
The lighting was brilliant.
The square thing behind him,
it's like a blank slate.
Yeah.
It's beautiful. So it made us only focus on him. Brilliant actor. He'd been for a lot of work for it.
Do you know what my favourite bit was, right?
My favourite bit was when they had a Tawia
song playing where she goes, I don't recognise this place, this faces. He did the entire thing silent.
It was beautiful.
It was just action. Wow. This whole he had gone back to Nigeria, like the silent performance of him going back to Nigeria. Yep. And everything's all about actions. You see scenes where he's trying to eat, he's getting food, no light,
he's getting tired of the place.
Yeah.
People are saying, oh, give me your clothes, because he had gifts but they wanted what he was wearing.
Exactly. And like, you know, he's trying to use the phone and then Nepa doesn't
exist anymore.
Really?
No.
Shame. Okay. The electricity went off and he's there kind of like, oh my god, this is everything's getting worse. You know, the one thing it needed, go on, Josh.
No, that's what I'm waiting for.
It needed a scene where he was asleep and he was slapping himself.
Yes.
Oh,
it needed that scene.
Yomi, if you're listening to this, put this in the final.
Are we going to get Yomi on? And in fact, I need to delete all these compliments, right?
He got feedback forms.
Not the feedback forms I sent him.
They gave up Maggie Cubes.
Maggie Cubes.
Oh, yeah.
And
I heard
the stew recipe as well. I was like, yes.
No, he went to town.
This is something.
I'll tell you, you know what? I have to say this. I just have to come out and say this.
Yeah.
Roundhouse have done an amazing job.
I'm amazed
with the Last Word Festival. Yeah. I mean, coming from somebody, right, who grew up, and I've said this to Lucy Atkinson, who's a Don, and she was the one who kind of, she got this ball rolling, and Liz Council, who's then taking it on to Words Festival. When I started Spoken Word, there was nothing like this.
Yeah.
There was nothing like this. I can say that too, actually. There was nothing like this
when I started poetry.
Back in 2012, you're so old, exactly. Some of you guys are too
young to remember those.
Boy, man, you ain't even passed one Olympics yet.
You know what I mean?
At least three. As a spoken word artist.
As a spoken word artist,
as a human being, that's not qualified. Doesn't that qualify?
No, it doesn't.
Don't do that thing that young spoken word artists do. I was writing since I was two. No, you weren't. Dude.
And if I was,
no, you weren't. What were you writing? Crayons.
Anyway, just going on.
Roundhouse have been killing it. I'll be honest with you. I'll give props to Roundhouse. I'll give props to Albany, of course, because they've been
so Albany, yeah. BAC, yeah.
BAC, right?
Yes, BAC,
Barbican,
South Bank.
Yeah, South Bank.
Like really, people, they invest in spoken word, not just invest in spoken word as in, oh, we're going to put it in there. Also investing in his future. Like, okay, great. You're a great spoken word artist. You got that one poem that can get a crowd hype, maybe two.
Yeah.
Where's your next step? I mean, as a poet myself, I struggled with that question. As you know, when I wrote my first poem that people gave me applause for, decent applause.
Which when was that? Has that happened yet?
Yeah. Many times. Right. Many times. Don't even go there.
It happened last night because you're at a show.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Thank you very much. So yeah, I struggled with what I was going to do afterwards. And I kind of fell into music. Because me and Musa, he had a friend, Young Gun, who was a rapper. And he knew some producers who were called Mumu at the time. And then he was changing their name to LV. And they were like, oh, just come down. Let's see what you're doing. And I kind of fell into that. Mm. And I know there are a lot of people who probably don't have that same kind of luck. Mm. There are a lot of people who come into spoken word and they leave because they're like, I don't know what else. You know, I've done all the shows. Yeah. I've done all the festivals. Yeah. And here come around us and they're like, and young kids are going to be coming in. You're going to do the slam. And after the slam, you're going to be walking out. You're going to be seeing people doing one person shows and you're going to know that this is the way forward.
You
know,
actually, side note on that real quick. So Yomi, when I was at Yomi's show was great for me more than just for the fact that as a Nigerian, I could relate to everything he was doing.
True.
It was also a sign of elevation in terms of the next step for poets.
Yeah.
Rather than just doing one-man shows, we could actually look to do scratches. Maybe even merge the one-man show, you know, you are on a mic with a drama element of your story.
Yeah.
It showed progression more than just performance, more than the writing. It showed everything.
Yeah.
So I went there leaving inspired because I was tired of the whole poetic journey before in a sense, but after that I was like, wait, there is more to this art form than I thought. And after seeing this show, and I was kind of glad that the Roundhouse had put on a space to show that, so I went there as more than an audience member. I went there as a student all over again in a sense.
Yeah.
And I left with a new kind of vision.
Really, like, you know, all the shows they put on, and because they're so wildly different, it really is like, it's just blowing the doors open.
Yeah.
I think if you go and watch whatever you might feel about any of the shows, the one thing you're going to take away is that anything is possible. Like, you, there's no one set way of spoken. You're not going into like, oh, one man shows are literally person's just going to stand there and chat. It's not, oh, people have to be the greatest actor and performers and they have to do full splits. It's not like just one version of, oh, you know, you need all of the sets, you need all of the lighting, you need so many lighting scenes. And it's also not, oh, it's just music, and then poetry. It's everything.
It's capturing a feeling.
Yeah, it's everything. It's capturing a feeling. And whatever ideas you have, they are welcome. You can come in, you can scratch it, you can try it. And yeah, I think that kind of opportunity is great.
Okay, here's me coming in. Like, so when I came into spoken word, right, because there weren't...
1976,
yeah,
right?
Trust me, man. me and Marvin Gaye, right? You know, because there weren't so many opportunities, we just crewed up and we did it like a sound system.
You mean
so,
like SX what? Collective?
Went, yes, I've got no problem with people crewing up. I just think, I think 30 people in a crew is a big Nando's bill, right? You know? So... This guy thinks he can date me. He thinks he can date me, man. I'm here in silence, right? You know what I'm saying? I'm here in silence, right? Anyway, right?
I'm vegetarian.
Right. You're a cheap date. You know what I mean?
You did tell me to let loose.
I do. No, I say to every guest, I say, let loose, because seriously, my skin is proper thick.
Oh, my God.
I don't think it is.
Oh,
it's proper thick enough.
All right, look. Thick and crusty. I need to draw a line. Right. We've got a few seconds.
All I was going to say is that we bandied up and we crewed, so we did the things ourselves. So whether we got accepted or rejected by the big institutions, it actually didn't matter. So when people talk about Arts Council cuts and whatever, that's never really affected me.
Same thing with Paul Jazzy.
I mean? It's never affected me. You know what I mean? Like, I remember talking to a lot of poets, going, oh my God, the Arts Council, they're getting cut in the budget. And I was like, who cares, man? As long as I can hire a place out, put on an event.
But that was
you know
then.
What I mean?
That was then. That was then, though. Because now a lot of us, especially, because a lot of my collective members, we talk about the fact that we really want to make a living out of this. And we find out how hard it is to jump through the hoops to get through Arts Council and all the funding. It's actually hoops.
Yeah.
Annoying hoops for many different reasons that kind of.
And you are not a tiger and the hoop is on fire.
No, literally, all that. And it's a thing where we kind of get disillusioned with even trying to approach them for anything. So a lot of us are actually falling out of love with all these Royal Festival halls and all that, because it's like, to get in there, it's like, yes, we have to work hard for them anyway, but why is it so hard that majority of us don't seem to be the people that even get.
Or the worst thing is when you have to compromise your art.
Exactly.
You know what really gets me? Awareness of the opportunities at all.
Yeah.
Like, what I like about this last word thing is that it's so big, around us is such a big institution, and it's so loud. Mm. Even if you miss this one, you will find out about the next one. If you're just kind of like going through the spoken word scene, you go to some dodgy night, someone's going to mention it. You're going to find out about the opportunity. The amount of chances that you miss as a, especially because of the scenes you're in. I mean, like me, you know, I'm a spoken word artist. I've drifted in and out of scenes. I've never been part of any, you know, I formed my own clique, same way as Mr. Mm-hmm. G. I formed Paul Jazzy. I formed Paul Minute in Team People. Mm-hmm. And I'm not going to lie to you, the amount of opportunities that I missed mm-hmm. just because I wasn't aware that they existed at all.
Yeah,
and what I like about the last word is that you can't not be aware of it. You know, I think it's really hard as a spoken word artist right now. You must know about Roundhouse Slam, especially if you're young.
Yeah.
You must know about Roundhouse Slam. Yeah. You must know about Roundhouse Collective. You must know about festivals. You must, if you're going to any
gig,
they
got a radio show.
But the problem with those things, because the word slam in our scene is a word widely used, but the connotations of the slam for Roundhouse are different from your, oh, I got a club, we're renting out a room, we're having a slam, if you know what I'm saying. So a lot of the poets, so the scene I came from, which was, for lack of a better word, more urban, if that makes any sense, I didn't know about any of those things until I applied for the Young Poet Laureate when it first started off.
Yeah.
And if not for me applying for that and then getting through to the finals...
But that's my point.
I would have been like, what? That's when I found out about Albany. I found out about Spread the Word. I found out about Apples and Snakes. I was like, wait, what's all this?
Yeah.
And then it brought me into this Royal Festival Hall side. I was like, okay, if a friend hadn't told me to apply for that scheme... I'd still be doing
the little,
all these other ones where people are like, oh, that punchline, woo! And I'm just like, and that was great,
but
then I wouldn't have known about the other aspect that could lead to actual longevity in the art.
And that's what I'm saying about the last word, because the last word is this huge, massive beacon, do you understand? Because it's so huge and because it's so prominent, I don't think there's any, there's less of a chance of a young poet, a 16, 17, 18-year-old poet coming into scene right
not
now.
Not being aware of it.
And not being aware of that. And once you're aware of the last word, imagine how many more other doors you're going to open just by you coming down and checking it out. You know, you're chatting to people and you're taking other flyers. I used to take out every single flyer for every single, I'd go to the Poetry Cafe, pick up a flyer, and I still miss shit. Imagine now, right? You go there, because once you go to the Roundhouse and you're good, someone's going to see you, going to tell you, you should apply for the, what's it called, the Barbican Young Poet thing. You go to that one, you don't get in, someone goes, oh, have you heard of BAC? Have you heard of Chilpia? Have you heard of this? And then suddenly everything starts opening up.
Because I first met you, because I mean, not when I first met you, but I remember the other time I met you is when I was doing those workshops over Represent Radio. And so who told you to come to that workshop?
That was through, again, me being involved in the Albany, because through the Albany, they worked to represent to raise awareness of the Young Poet Laureate scheme.
Yeah.
So all that kind of worked in tandem to in terms of me getting to work with you, which is coincidentally weeks after I'd seen you
at London Live.
So
I think that anything that promotes dreams, right? Because obviously, you know, you
dreams can't come.
Don't even think of doing it, bro.
That's the last song.
Don't even think of doing it. No.
July.
That's not going to be the last song ever.
Thank you very much.
No, the last song.
Can't come.
No,
it's gonna happen. I'm pausing it now. Goodbye.
No,
bye everyone.
Motherfucker.
Speak soon. Bye bye.
By my side, and I feel Around me, you make me feel so sick.